Aster looked at Cody, and he looked back, and then they both looked at me. "Baby," Cody muttered, shaking his head. He never said more than two or three words at a time, but his eloquence was astounding. "We want to eat first," Aster said. "Lillianne is waiting for you," I said, "and your mother. Get in the car." "But we're hungry," Aster said. "Don't you think meeting your new sister is more important?" "No," Cody said. "The baby isn't going anywhere, and it isn't really doing anything except lying there and maybe pooping," Aster said. "We've been sitting in that dumb building for hours, and we're hungry."
"We can get a candy bar at the hospital," I said.
"Candy bar," Aster said,
making it sound like I had suggested she eat week-old roadkill.
"We want pizza," Cody said.
I sighed. Apparently, rosy glows were not contagious. "Just get in the car," I said. And with a glance at each other and a surly double stare for me, they did. The drive back to the hospital theoretically should have been about the same distance as the trip in from the hospital to the park. But in fact, it seemed to be twice as long, since Cody and Aster sat in complete and sullen silence the whole way, except that every time we passed a pizza place, Aster would call out,
"There's Papa John's,"
or Cody would say quietly, "Domino's." I'd been driving these streets my entire life, but I'd never before realized how completely the entire civilization of Miami is devoted to pizza. The city was littered with the stuff. A lesser man would certainly have weakened and stopped at one of the many pizza parlors, especially since the smell of hot pizza somehow drifted into the car, even with the air conditioning on. And it had been several hours since I had eaten, too. My mouth began to water, and every time one of the kids said, "Pizza Hut," I was sorely tempted to park the car and attack a large with everything. But Lillianne was waiting, and my will was strong, and so I gritted my teeth and kept to the straight and narrow of Dixie Highway, and soon I was back in the hospital parking lot and trying to herd two unwilling children into the building. The foot dragging continued, all the way across the parking lot. At one point, Cody even stopped dead and looked around as if he had heard someone call his name, and he was very reluctant to move again, even though he was not yet standing on the sidewalk. "Cody," I said, "move along. You'll get run over." He ignored me. His eyes roved across the rows of parked cars and fixed on one about 50 feet away. "Cody," I said again, and I tried to nudge him along. He shook his head slightly.
"Shadow guy," he said.
I felt small and prickly feet on my spine and heard a cautious unfolding of dark leathery wings in the distance. Shadow Guy was Cody's name for his dark passenger, and although it was untrained, it could not be ignored. I stopped and looked at the small red car that had caught his attention, searching for some clue that might resonate with my own inner sentinel. Someone was half visible through the windshield of the car reading the New Times, Miami's weekly alternative paper. Whoever it was gave no sign of interest in us or anything else besides the cover story, an exposé of our city's massage parlors.
"That guy is watching us," Aster said.
I thought of my earlier alarm and the mysterious bouquet of roses. It was the flowers that decided me. Unless there was a slow-acting nerve toxin in the roses, there was no real threat hovering around me. And while it was possible that the person in the car really was a predator of some kind, this was Miami, after all, I felt no twinge of warning that he was focused on us. "That guy is reading the paper," I said, "and we are standing in the parking lot wasting time. Come on." Cody turned slowly to look at me, an expression of surprised peevishness on his face. I shook my head and pointed at the hospital. The two of them exchanged one of their patented looks and gave me a matching expression that said they were disappointed but not surprised at my substandard performance.